Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and Champions League. I'm Robbie Earl. Robbie Musto, sunning himself in Miami, would you believe? So we've got a good studio buddy, Tim Howard, who's going to join me today. So here are today's topics. Chelsea dropped further away from Man City after a scoreless draw at Wolves, despite Thomas Tuchel calling for the game to be postponed beforehand due to multiple COVID-19 positive cases with the Blue squad. Spurs play out an entertaining 2-2 draw with Liverpool and their first match in 2 weeks. Manchester City put on a clinic at Newcastle to cement their spot at the top. And Arsenal take Leeds apart at Elm Road to strengthen their place in fourth. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. Tim, always a pleasure. Great to have you here as Mr. Musto gets some sun in Miami. He probably needed it.
He did. I enjoy when Musty gives me the opportunity to be on the podcast. One of my favorite things of the week. So happy to be here.
Good, my friend. Let's start with the biggest story of the week in the Premier League. The disruption of COVID-19 on the fixtures. We've lost 10 Premier League matches postponed in the past week due to COVID outbreaks. We've heard a number of managers publicly say how unhappy they are that the games are continued. We're hearing things from some of the players who maybe are not best pleased with having these daily tests and showing where we are. How do you feel in terms of the overall position that the Premier League is in? And do you feel as though we are getting close to the point where we may have to take a break?
Sadly, I think we may have to take a break. The Premier League are in their impossible position. They're trying to manage the integrity of the league. They're trying to manage requests from, and they are handling it on a case-by-case basis, yep, as they should currently. That there's a lot that goes into that because we saw today, Chelsea wanted the game off. They have 7 COVID cases. They have players on the bench that can't fill a bench necessarily. They have players on the bench coming back from injury. So they're risking massive injury with Kovacic and Conte. They wanted the game off, so they have a case. And yet the Premier League put the game on, and that's fine. When you look at, you know, the meetings that are rumored to be, you know, had tomorrow, there's going to be a lot of pressure to try and at least get a small little break, as managers have talked about, to break the chain, suppress the curve of this. Because right now, I mean, take Liverpool as an example. Jordan Henderson trained yesterday with the team. You talked on the show about tactically how he would be in the team and how that affects the team. And then he wakes up on the morning of the game and he's out. But I also look at the other side of it, right, from the health and safety and think he was around players that would have played on the pitch today. Right? He'd been in a hotel, he'd been on a team bus, all those things. So that starts to snowball because they test every day or every other day. There's going to be more cases in that Liverpool team, as an example, today, tomorrow, the next day. And so it begins to snowball. And at some point, some way, we have to try to break the curve, suppress this, so that we can move on with the rest of the fixtures.
It's interesting. You talk about the stakeholders involved and how complex this situation is because you've got owners who may have one view. You've got managers may have another view. You've got players who might have a view. Staff who are working at the clubs and then the fans. So we've got many stakeholders who are looking at it from different points of view. I just wanted you to take a moment, being as we're both ex-players from that position. I want to take you back 10 years. Let's say this was happening in your time. You might have a couple of young kids at home. You might have a family member who's, you know, at risk. Would you be comfortable in the current environment training, playing with, like you say, possibly next to somebody who could be carrying the virus? It could come, you know, it could come out in a couple of days or so. Would you be comfortable? Would you have no issues playing? Would it start playing on your mind a little bit?
I think it probably would if you had, you know, young children or family member who lived with you. You saw who was elderly or at risk or whatever it was. Again, that part of that argument is, you know, at this moment in time, 10 years ago, would I have been vaccinated, double vaccinated, boosted, all these things? And if that was the case, then I would probably be comfortable doing it by, but also taking the proper precautions in and around the training ground, hotel, bus, etc. But it is so difficult because that is my opinion. That's how I feel about it. But when you get into a Premier League club and you have 23 players in and around the first team squad, the opinions are going to be varied both on vaccinations, on family members who are at home. It's a very difficult one.
Yeah, it is a very difficult situation. And I think the complexity of the virus in the situation makes it not an easy decision for the Premier League to make. We heard some strong voices today, Thomas Tuchel in particular. Jurgen Klopp went very strong. Pep Guardiola seems as like, and we know people like Brendan Rodgers, Thomas Frank. What's your gut tell you that might happen? We're hearing there's a meeting tomorrow between, executive meeting being called between the owners and the managers and possibly the captains over the next day or two. The Athletic are talking about a possible one-match game postponement, which they're talking about. We try and play Boxing Day and then maybe take off 28th, 29th and 30th. That would then get you back for the January games. You okay? Does that feel okay, or do you feel that we need to almost go, if we're going to do it properly and take a 2 or 3 week break, maybe through to mid-January?
Yeah, look, I think that we've been dealing, you know, you and I, and we've been covering this thing all through Project Restart and the pandemic. We haven't seen clubs be rocked with the virus as they have been over the last, let's call it 14 days. Mm. It, you know, they really seem like they're struggling with it. Yeah. Most of the clubs. And so my gut tells me that there will be some sort of break. I don't necessarily know that if they play Boxing Day on the 27th and then they take off 28th, 29th, or whatever that is. I don't know if just that one round of fixtures gets us through the problem. I think the problem needs out of the training ground, clean everything out, sterilize all the things, get people away. Obviously, I think during the Christmas period, as we've seen, with families coming over, with families in and around the house, there could be a spike in numbers just based on sheer contact.
Yeah, we've talked about stakeholders, and a lot of the tension is on managers, on players, maybe on owners of football clubs and staff. But one of the big stakeholders who are missing out on this are the fans. Mm. And I think when we say the fans, we instantly think of somebody who lives close or is living in the UK and travelling. But there's many worldwide fans who, you know, Christmas time have probably decided they want to go to London, going to catch 3 or 4 games over the course of a weekend. And so I thought it was fitting for us, maybe for our underappreciated performers of the week this week, to be the travelling supporters worldwide. For those people who've made a trip maybe to the UK, have been looking for years to go to a match, and it's been called off and they're not there. I mean, at the moment, games have been called off sometimes like 2 hours before kickoff. I mean, it's incredible. I mean,
absolutely, they should be... you know, the underappreciated performers, because, look, there's so many pieces to this puzzle. Mm. When we see the Aston Villa game call off, and we see those Villa support, we see all the supporters outside the ground, they're devastated. Yeah. And look, I know that health and safety is first and foremost.
Correct.
But a lot of well-earned money is spent, a lot of time is spent traveling, a lot of planning goes into it, and these fans turn up and they're outside the stadium with really nowhere to go but home. Yeah. And it's difficult. You see the sad faces on the kids that wanted to see their heroes. And so... it is so very difficult, particularly for the fans when they travel. And as you said, some of it's getting on the train or on the motorway up from London to Birmingham. So some are flying halfway around the world to see their heroes. And so it is a very difficult situation.
And obviously they're also exposing themselves possibly to COVID, you know, in their travel, if it's public service, if it's using the metro and all those things. So I think it's just fitting for this week's underappreciated performers. With only 4 games going on, it was the travelling supporters worldwide. Let's get to the games. We got 4 in the end. I think we fingers crossed at one point. Yeah. We weren't too sure. Yeah. We got 1 on Saturday. We got 3 today. Let's talk about Wolves and Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Thomas Tuchel is one of those who's been very vocal. Obviously, you looked at his team and realised that they were really under strength. Talked about only 4 outfield players and his subs. He had to put 2 goalkeepers there. Trevor Chalobah played in a holding central midfielder. We hadn't seen that before. Yeah. We were slightly surprised. Maybe thought Reece James may play in there. They were missing quality and talent up front. At the end of the day, will a 0-0 draw, is that a point gained in the end for all the circumstances, for all that they've gone through, or is that 2 drop for Chelsea?
I think it's 2 drop. Look, going to Wolves and scoring against that really stingy Wolves defense was always going to be tough. Mm. And Thomas Tuchel's talked about that cutting edge, that ruthlessness in front of goal, and Chelsea's kind of been lacking that. So when you look at those 2 things combined, you think it's going to be a difficult day. Yeah. You know, when I initially looked at the team sheet, I thought Reece James would go into the center midfield next to Conte. Yeah. And in fact, I actually thought Tuchel got that wrong, because it was really you could put Chalobah as one of the center backs, get Azpilicueta out to the wing back, and put Reece James in that holding midfield role where he has played before.
Yeah.
And so having to pull off Trevor Chalobah it felt like that decision was wrong, and he tried to rectify it, as Tuchel often does. Chelsea, for me, when we talk about Romelu Lukaku, someone up the top end of the pitch who can stretch the pitch. Even Timo Werner, who is not prolific. We know he's not prolific. He runs in behind. He stretches defenders. He at least makes the center half have to check his shoulder and speak to his other center half and make it dragged out, which allows for that space just in front of the defenders for Chelsea to occupy. And today, I just didn't think they were at it. Again, I didn't see the cutting. It is a worry because I was happy to say it's a one-off a couple games ago. But we've seen it now probably 2, 3, and 4 times. And, in fact, Tuchel has been vocal about it. And so it is there. It is a problem. If they can get Romelu Lukaku back fit from COVID, Werner back fit, they will be okay. But is okay too little too late because that gap starts to open up now?
Yeah, I think he'll be happy with a clean sheet because they haven't won them for a while. But I agree. And the Chalobah thing was interesting because I thought today their build-up out the back wasn't good. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that clinical passing that Jorginho brings. Kovacic, we know, missed a lot of games. He came on late. But Chalobah in there, I thought, made them go a bit long back to front. They went long into Pulisic, who was the false nine. That's not his job. I didn't think he held things up well. So all the chemistry and the passing combinations that Chelsea do so well didn't happen for them today. And I thought that was a miss. I want to go to that top end of the pitch because it was Mount Ziyech underneath Pulisic today. And obviously Christian Pulisic starting. And he's got to make the most of these opportunities and minutes because we know these players probably who are going to start ahead of him. It's the one area of the pitch that I still think there's a question mark about Chelsea. It's not grooved. When you see Manchester City, it's grooved in the way they're going to get goals. The Raheem Sterling goal that he scores today is a typical Man City goal. They get down the outside, play across, and Sterling scores. That, you know, that's pretty much a City goal. Liverpool, you know, Salah and Mane and width and crossing and things. These are Liverpool style of goals. I still haven't quite got what's a Chelsea attacking goal. What's their DNA in the attacking third of the pitch? That's a part of the pitch I think they still need to improve on. They're going to go close.
That, as well as they do predicate their success on keeping clean sheets. Right? And they were brilliant at it. So when there's a little bit of a crack in the armor, you start to think, well, you know, Azpilicueta said it after the game, they're used to winning 1-0, 2-0. When they're conceding, that kind of throws them off a bit. So the focal point has to be defending, keeping a clean sheet. I don't think this Chelsea team is going, if we look at Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, even in the next 1, 2, 3 years, they're not going to be as prolific as Liverpool, and that's okay. It's a slightly different style, but that style means got to be really tight at the back, really solid, not only not give away goals. When they're at their best, they're not even give away chances, right? And so then they can go up there, dominate possession, score the one goal, and get out of dodge.
Pre and post games, Tuchel was really strong about not wanting. Apparently, Chelsea wanted the game postponed. They wasn't allowed, and he's asked for clarity of the reasons why some people can get a game postponed and they can't. He talked about it after the game, said he was pleased with the effort, pleased with the work of his team, but didn't want the game to be played and says the Premier League, it's on the Premier League. We spoke in studio and said, like, I understand what he's doing before the game. I understand what he's doing after the game. Do you think Thomas Tuchel is smart enough to leave all that outside the dressing room and be a different person in front of that group? Because I just get the sense if there was any negativity that seeps into a dressing room, you know what it's like. Players will jump on that. Well, we didn't think because he wasn't playing, because he wasn't fit, because he... I just wondered, do you think Thomas Tuchel was still fired up when he got in that dressing room to a point where he's getting everybody on the toes?
Yeah, well, Robbie, I think the man management side of things is so difficult. When you're the manager of a football club. And Tuchel, who usually is very measured, he had that chip on his shoulder, rightfully so, by the way. He had a chip on his shoulder today. You know, they had 7 COVID cases. We talked about bringing players back early from injury. They had as good a case as any team to get a game called off, and it didn't. And so my wonder is, that didn't just happen, okay? They went to Wolves, so they were in a hotel, right? They would have known that last night. They would have known that at breakfast this morning, at the pregame meal, at the team walk, around about, you know, 9 o'clock. And so what was his mood like? Was he agitated? Was he annoyed? Was he waiting on clarity from the Premier League? When they got to the stadium, he gave the pre-match interview. As you said, when he had to face his team front on, was he cool? Was he calm? Or was that agitation, which players we'll hang on to.
Yeah.
You know, players will look for any excuse.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and again,
we
particularly when you're not playing at your best. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that insecurity kind of creeps in. And so I just wonder how good was his or is his poker face. Was he able to get in front of his team and pretend that there was no issues?
Yeah.
I'm on your side. I tend to think that that agitation that he felt probably the last 24, 48 hours probably seeps into that Chelsea squad today.
The 6 points now behind City. We'll talk about City is win in a moment. I just looked at the next four games. So they go Villa, Brighton, and then go Liverpool, Manchester City. Mm. Is that pretty much, will that tell us then if they're going to be in around it or not? I mean, that 6 point gap is a big gap when you're playing someone like City who relentlessly win games. Yeah. But is the next month crucial to them staying in this as a top three race?
Yeah, and I won't say that it's doom and gloom, but when you look at those fixtures, there's telltale signs there. Two, they should just win straight out, and then massive competition, right? Which is where they're going to claw back the points.
Correct.
It's not going to be against the lesser teams.
Yeah.
They need to win those games clearly, like they didn't do today. But their ability to get that 6 point gap closed is going to be all the head to head matches with the two teams above them. So we'll know a lot more.
Mm.
I tend to think that 6 point gap might get slightly bigger in that time.
Yeah, I've always thought they were a little bit behind the other two, but we'll see now if they can hang in there and obviously get some players fit and get some players healthy to give themselves a chance in their next games. Let's move it on to Spurs and Liverpool, which was, after all the weekend we've had and the disappointment of losing games, I thought a compelling, intense, entertaining, combative game. Lots of incidents, yellow cards, red cards, should have been penalties, could have been penalties, goals. Let's start off with the game itself. Jurgen Klopp again was a bit like Tuchel, not happy, wanted it out there. We talked about Jordan Henderson, talked about one or two players who he had to throw in, I think Naby Keita and James Milner, who've not had much training, not played for a little while. Will Jurgen Klopp be satisfied with a point?
You know, I think he talked, he will be. I think he talked after the game about it's not doomsday, everything, you know. It was a good performance from his team. Uncharacteristic mistake from his goalkeeper, who continues to save them time and time again. Yeah. And he wants an offensive goalkeeper. So, you know, I don't think that's an issue. When you put young Tyler Morton in the middle of midfield to do a replacement job for your captain, Jordan Henderson, it's not just getting around the pitch. It's not just the balls that you play. It's the presence. You know, I keep saying we've both been there. There's certain players, when you walk down that tunnel, you just know you have a chance today. Yeah. And when you're in that tunnel and one of your key players, captain, leaders, isn't there, it's a blow. It hurts. It's harder to perform. And so I think you saw that today. But I don't think it's doom and gloom. I think they're the way that they play, what a great game of football, by the way. Yeah. As you said, there were penalty shots on both ends. There was, you know, red card, should have been red card. Harry Kane gets back on the score sheet. So, like, they had opportunities.
Yeah, and I take your criticism. I don't think it's a criticism of Tyler Morton. It was just the way that the game was played and the position that he was in. Let's go through some of the... Let's talk Spurs first, because we haven't seen them for a couple of weeks. We've had three games off. I thought for an hour, we start to see the fingerprints of what Antonio Conte's team are going to be about. They're going to be energetic, they're going to be aggressive, they're going to be committed, they're going to win some ball. They broke with real threat in the counter-attack. Yeah. And on a better day, Spurs could have been 2-3-1 up by half-time and possibly clear of the game. You know, Kane scored but had a couple of good chances. Son missed a couple of chances. Dele Alli had a few chances. I thought for an hour before they started to run out of steam and it just started, you know, heavy legs with one or two players. Sassignon hadn't played, Dele Alli hadn't played. But I thought we got an impression of what Conte's work will be like. And those 2 weeks, you could see, have been sort of well-studied on the work that they've done.
Well, I think that when you look at, I agree, with Antonio Conte coming in, he didn't have any time. He actually bought himself that. He didn't buy it, but he was given time because of the postponements and cancellations, both with snow and with COVID. And so they were playing well initially under him, which is, again, that new manager bounce that you hope you get. And then you get 2 weeks to get on the training ground, double sessions if need be, start to really formulate the ideas that you want without having to worry about injuries and picking teams to play in matches because he didn't have any.
Yeah.
You know, what I like about the way he plays is you talked about they broke with real venom when it was time to go. They went. So they got players behind the ball. They spread out.
Yeah.
Son and Kane a little bit to either side of Morton, number six, which made it very difficult defensively.
Yeah.
But they not only did they sit in that little block, but they were aggressive in the block. So it wasn't just, come on, we'll invite all the pressure.
I think that's the difference.
That's the difference, correct.
Yeah, and maybe so, Nuno's teams.
Nuno's teams and Mourinho's teams.
Passive and,
it was more win the ball, first ball forward. And I think that you saw the opportunities. They, I mean, best team in the league, Liverpool, one of, you know, and they got chance after chance. And so I think when I look at where they are, if they already continue to find form, they have a lot of games in hand, they're right there in that top four race. In fact, they're probably, for me, one of the favorites in the top four race if they can continue to get results.
And Harry Kane scoring goals, he got one, he's got to get more. Let's go through the big talking points in this game, because there was a few.
Yeah.
Harry Kane's involved in one of them. He has a tackle on Andrew Robertson. Mm-hmm. I think when I first saw it, I thought, oh, he's got the ball there. And I thought, at most, it's going to be yellow. Then I saw a couple of replays come down, and he didn't get any ball, and he took Robinson on the ankle. We're still showing. Now, I'm amazed that the referee wasn't called to the monitor to have a look at that. Having given a yellow, VAR's job is to look and say, are you sure? Come and have a look and be sure that that's a yellow, because this looks like it could possibly be a red card. But there was no, for Paul Turner, no going to the monitor, which I was a little surprised about. I don't know with you.
Yeah.
And I thought Harry Kane was very lucky to get a yellow card.
Well, you and I agree on this, right? So we'll take it independently and then we'll talk about the decisions together. I think Harry Kane, and this is okay because I think other people get the other side of it. Sometimes with referees, your reputation precedes you. Harry Kane genuinely is a nice guy. He certainly isn't a dirty player. He usually does everything right. Like, I've seen players who are dirty players who maybe don't even get a red card tackle, but end up getting sent off because we know he's a dirty player. Harry Kane's not that. When you look at the tackle, whether it be slow motion or full speed, he's left his feet, he slid in aggressively, his studs are showing, and he catches Robertson on the ankle, shin area.
Yeah.
It certainly could be a red card. Like, I think if he brandishes the red card, nobody argues.
No.
Okay? When we go to Robertson, and I agree with you, Paul Tierney wasn't called over to the television monitor.
No. So VAR looked and obviously said,
correct,
yellow's okay.
Correct. With Robertson, which I actually didn't think was a red card.
Yeah.
I didn't think was a red card. I think he swung through, he caught the player. Fine. If he's going to go over to the monitor, Paul Tierney, and look at Robertson's, he 1,000% then has to, in the first half,
go
look at the monitor. Yeah. I mean, they're very similar fouls.
The big question is, why would VAR tell him to look at the Robertson one but not to look at the Kane? And that comes to your point, is it because he's England captain? Mm. Is it because he's not that kind of guy? Because that should never come into a referee's mind. Between the referee on the pitch and the VAR, it's their job to get to the right decision. And you've got the video and you've got the time and you've got the angles to do that. So I thought it was a red for Robertson. I thought it endangered the safety of the opponent. I thought he kicked over the ball. He knew he was going to make contact. I think he went to catch Royal, maybe not quite as bad as he did, but I thought that, for me, is an endangering thing. And I thought both were red cards.
Well, that's an interesting point, okay? I don't necessarily see it the same way, but I'm going to take your point for a second. Let me run it back. Robertson definitely was trying to get ball and man, and he was trying to make a point. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Which is different than Kane, because I don't think Kane was trying to smash Robertson. But he ends up smashing Robertson.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so... So I think they have to be judged very similarly, and they weren't.
Yeah. Both offences should have got the same action.
Yes, correct.
And if you gave Harry a yellow, you almost then have to say, Robert, you're right on the line, but here's a yellow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
but,
correct.
But I thought both were reds, but anyway. I think Liverpool can feel a little bit hard-done by on that one. There was a big call on the Diogo Jota, which I believe incensed Jurgen Klopp. He went to talk to the referee, Paul Tierney, at half-time about it. And apparently the referee said to his Klopp about, well, Jota's stopped, almost encouraged the contact, put the brakes on, and that's why the challenge. And I think Klopp's almost said, well, anyone who's played or understand the game knows to take a shot, you've got to stop and plant your feet and hit the ball. I tend to agree with Jurgen Klopp. I tend to agree, for me, there was enough contact by Royal in the back of Jota in the box. It's clumsy. Mm-hmm. He didn't need to be going at such speed. And for me, was a penalty kick that Liverpool didn't get.
Yeah, I think that this isn't an absolute, but as a rule of thumb,
yeah,
if the attacker is in the penalty area and he's in control of the ball, we saw the Dele Alli one, right?
Correct.
Gets a bit pushed over, looks for the foul.
Yeah.
He wasn't in control of the ball.
No, the ball.
Anytime a striker or a player is in control of the ball, Jota was in complete control of the ball.
Yeah.
It was his.
Yeah.
You have to then take it off him. Mm. When the attacker is in control of the ball, the defenders have to be 1 trillion percent sure.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Royal bumps him in the back.
Yeah.
And do I think Jota was clever, whether he stopped or whether he got his body across?
Yeah. It doesn't really matter
because ultimately he was in control of the ball, whether he was stopping to shoot, whether he was stopping to draw the foul. Yeah. He was in control of the ball. Emerson Royal was out of control, barged him from the back. For me, it's a penalty every day of the week.
Yeah, the moment that Jota's setting to shoot, Royal should be putting the brakes on.
Correct.
He should be going, whoa, I can't go in there.
That's
and then now try and get your body around or your foot around to block.
Sure.
But if you go with the pace that he runs and Jota stops, guess what's going to happen?
Absolutely.
I thought they were a bit lucky. Jurgen Klopp obviously had something to say about that. Fascinating game. Great game. Two apiece in the end. I thought it was about a fair result. Liverpool will obviously be disappointed dropping points. Do you think Jurgen Klopp will be sitting on the bus worrying more about the COVID situation or more that he's dropped a couple of points and maybe City are just starting to get a little bit of a gap now?
Well, I don't think he's worried about a three-point gap.
Yeah.
Even games played at 18, three-point gap, this Liverpool team. I mean, this Liverpool team, even though they're different than Man City, they're equally as good as Manchester City. And when you look at the way his team's playing, I think he's concerned about the COVID and how it's affecting his team.
Yeah.
And they'll make those 3 points up somewhere. But clearly, you know,
I'm going to lose Mane and Salah.
They're going to lose Mane
about
and Salah.
That, aren't we? That is something that we have to factor in every time we talk about Liverpool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lose. And so, you know, again, you talk about this. They only have a certain amount of games until those players go.
Yeah.
Right? And in his mind, whether, again, it's case by case, he might be delighted to get a few games off and then make them up the back end of the season when his two top players are back.
Let's talk about Spurs. You mentioned it earlier. 26 points at the moment with three games in hand on Arsenal. Can get themselves right back into frame in fourth spot. Where do you see Conte, Spurs in fourth spot? Has he got enough time? Is there enough in that squad to vie for that fourth spot? Are they serious contenders? You know, we're thinking the likes of Arsenal in good form, West Ham, Manchester United.
Arsenal are in really good form. Arsenal, you know, I think from the exciting standpoint of things, you know, I think it could be a North London race, you know, sprinkled in there with Manchester United for that fourth spot. I think West Ham might just drop out of it, in terms of quality. But the games in hand for me give Tottenham the edge. Yeah. Now defensively, I don't think Tottenham are that good. I still think they need some shoring up. I still think, you know, Royal looks good on the ball, but he's not always there. We saw, which didn't lead to anything. But Sanchez had a few mistakes today. It never led to a goal. Mm. So I'm not sure they've figured out exactly who their left back is. So they're a worry for me defensively. But I do believe that they have a lot of quality, and I think with the games in hand, the edge slightly goes to them. But I'll tell you what, Arsenal are playing incredibly well.
Yeah. I think you can see Antonio Conte's fingerprints all over the game. And I've just noticed January the 16th, there's a serious game, Spurs at home to Arsenal in the North London Derby. That could be quite a special game with both of them blind for fourth spot, as you say, Arsenal going well. Let's talk about Manchester City, because it's this time of year. I noticed last year that they were on a 21 unbeaten run in all competitions. That was pretty much enough to win them the title. They've gone 8 straight wins today, 4 goals against Newcastle, clean sheet, everything that Pep would have wanted. Rotated a few players again. Jack gets a rest. Fernandinho gets a rest. Are they about to kick on? Is the worry that they now kick on and create a 8-9 point gap that's too big to catch?
Yeah, I mean, you look at. Let me go back to players who were left out today. Gundogan, Fernandinho, Jack Grealish. Pep has best man manager for me that I've ever seen, or certainly one of them. And, you know, Gundogan had the best season he's ever had last
15
year.
15 Premier League goals.
Yeah. And Jack Grealish, they spent a boatload of money for him.
Yeah.
He has this way of rotating players, right? And I think particularly with those two, Jack Grealish comes in. It's a different system for him.
Yeah.
He dips him in, brings him out, dips him in, brings him out. By the end of the season, in that championship run, we may see the best of Jack Grealish. And that will be down to the fact that Pep Guardiola keeps him hungry, he pulls back on the reins, then he lets him run. It's going to be really, really interesting because I do think with Manchester City, as you mentioned, they have this way of like lulling you to sleep, of being so good, you just get bored of how good they are, bored of how much possession, how many goals they score. Like they scored four again. Amazing. Of course they did. And then all of a sudden you blink and you're like, they haven't lost in 20 games. And they just keep going from strength to strength. So I think we're going to see that again this year.
Yeah. We were talking with Bex earlier, and I said, I'm sure they've got a mathematician, a sports scientist, who's logging the numbers, who's always going, right, he's played these amount of minutes. We're going to give him a rest now for two or three games. And I also get the sense that part of the rotation, and I would say right now they're the freshest team in the Premier League in terms of bringing people in. Not, people haven't been overworked. Morris comes in for a few games. He has a rest. Jack's now resting. And resting Jack after a 7-0 win when he scored, I think it's great management because he kind of feels okay about having a rest. Yeah. Whereas it was a 1-0 and he hasn't scored, he might be thinking, I want to play and prove something.
Sure.
So, but I just think with Pep, all that managing of minutes, all that understanding the players, I think it's a two-way thing as well. I think the players have to understand why he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, I've got to be honest, if I was playing and he kept rotating me or playing me left side 1 minute, centre and right, I'd be a bit like, play one position and play some games and get. That's how I played. I needed my match with them. I needed to play in a certain place, a certain time to be on top of my game. But I think there's a buy-in from these players that it's maybe different from the old days when, you know, pretty much teams pick themselves. You're 11 if they've played and that. He's decided that with the competitions they're in, with the challenges and the physicality of the Premier League, he's got to dip people in and out for different competitions. And he's almost, I mean, he's a magician at it, an absolute magician.
I think part of, he is a magician. I think part of the growing pains for any new player coming to City is this. You touched on it. Jack Grealish, first name on the team sheet, whether he's injured or not, at Aston Villa.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going in there, you're playing on the left side. Mm. Every time we get the football, the other 10 players are thinking, where's that number 10 jersey? Yeah. Where's Jack Grealish? I'm getting the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. When you play Manchester City, and we talk about Sterling, we can talk about Foden, we can talk about Jesus. You may, on a given week, and you don't know this, by the way, you may be named in the team sheet as a false nine, Jesus.
Yeah.
You may be named on the team sheet as a wide right player.
Yeah.
Phil Foden, you're wide left. Maybe you're going to go up front now as a false nine.
Yeah.
And so that I could see how that could mess with a player's head. I've never had this before.
I'm a left winger.
But Pep expects you to be adaptable, execute the game plan, and by the way, find out on Friday or Saturday morning that you're playing the false nine, but I've only ever really played left wing.
Mm.
So you can imagine as a player who's never had that before, it takes a little
challenge,
bit of time. And we've seen it with Sterling. He's flourishing. We've seen it with Jesus flourishing.
Mahrez,
you know. Mm. So, but it doesn't happen overnight. And so as we start to see that, we'll get the best of Jack.
Yep. City certainly putting 8 straight wins now in the Premier League. This is where they kick into gear. Just a quick word on Newcastle. I mean, 5 minutes in the game, you've got centre-back, who's what I call meat and potato centre-back.
Mm-hmm.
Head it, kick it, get it away. Kieran Clarke.
Yeah.
A ball comes into your six-yard box. He ducks under it, Tim. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, if that's my play, I've got to tell you, me and him are rowing at half time.
Oh,
he ducks under the ball. Diaz then heads it in. You're 1-0 up again. You're 1-0 down then against the best team, the reigning champions, up against it. And that's got to be the most difficult and challenging thing for Eddie Howe, that you go on the training ground, you know, you work your defending, you do your drills, hour on hour on hour on hour, to keep a clean sheet, to not give goals away, and then 5 minutes into the game, you're meat and potatoes, head it, kick it, defender, ducks under a ball, and you're 1-0 down. I mean, it just makes me wonder if Newcastle can survive based on those kind of things.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to do all the work you're doing, then first 5 minutes of a game, your centre-back, who's there to repel things, just get it away, not only to play out the back, I'm not going to be, you know, a Maldini and impossible. I'm just saying, get it away from my goal. Ducks under a ball. Then I don't know where you go from there.
So you want to be a Premier League manager, you know, and I agree with that. You can't, managers can't legislate for mistakes and for injuries.
Yeah.
And you prepare a team. You tell them how to play. You tell them the threats of what's going to actually happen and what to do. And his center half, who, as you said, is a meat and potato center half, his bread and butter is heading the ball and kicking it. He doesn't head it. There's nothing Eddie Howe can do. I think there's some square pegs and round holes at Newcastle. You know, I looked there. They have 10 points from 18 games. I mean, the teams above them, you know, Watford has 2 games in hand. Burnley have 3 games in hand. You know, can they make up 3 points on Watford and get themselves out? Yeah, sure. But the fact of the matter is, Watford have 2 games in hand. It's just
to stay up. It doesn't look good. They're going to need 35, 36 points.
Yeah.
So we're talking 16, 18. They're going to have to win 6, 7, 8 games out.
You just don't know where that's coming from. You don't see this team winning a game, let alone that many. I think it's a tough ask.
I mean, there seems to be a thought at Newcastle. Let's wait for January. We can bring, you know, we're the richest club in the world. We can bring in some players. Not sure that's the total answer. Yes, you'll get better players, but you've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I think Robbie, I think there's a plan in this, right? Like the they're not the richest club in the world or whatever that is.
Yeah.
And yes, can you bring in players? But it's short term. Who's available? Mm. And by the way, the teams you're buying from also know how much is in your bank account.
Yeah.
So they're going to want crazy money for players in January. And, you know, it's going to test Newcastle's ownership's resolve. Do they bring players in that are maybe bridge players, right? They're not the top end who we're going to buy in 3 years and be the glamour club. But maybe they're better players than what we have to get us over the line. If they can bring enough in, Robbie, and maybe Eddie Howe has a say on and that, like, hey, I need these players to fit my system. If they can do that, what we both know is the crazy thing in the Premier League that I've always told people from all of my years, if you can put back-to-back wins together, it makes you feel like you're the greatest team in the world. By the way, it shoots you up the table because the teams ahead of you probably haven't won back-to-back games. That's why it doesn't happen as often as you'd like.
Yeah.
And so a team at the bottom, if they can get new players in, somehow find a way to claw 2 results, then all of a sudden they leapfrog and they put the pressure on the teams below them. So it's a big ask. It's a big if. But that has to – I mean, look, that being said, Robbie, I can't imagine with all the fanfare around the new ownership takeover that they're just going to lie down and accept this. I have a feeling they're going to at least go in and splash some cash in January to try – they have to.
Yeah.
They have to try and stay in the league by any means necessary.
Does – the slight warning for me for Newcastle before we move on is when I look at Eddie Howe, and I think he's a very capable coach. I think in the right environment, he's a good fit. And I said it, I think he's a right fit for Newcastle because I think he'll try and do it in the right way. I see him today, and I almost think Eddie Howe would love to be Pep. Wants to play Pep football with Pep style of players. Unfortunately, he's shopping
so
in a different place. We'd all love to, but part of me wonders, is there enough reality to Eddie Howe to where they are and what's required? Because by the way, clean sheets are going to keep you in this league, not goals. They might score. They conceded 41 goals. That's the most in the Premier League. He's got to have more attention to defending. Every time I hear him, he talks about how we played and gotten the ball, and I just think, get some clean sheets out first.
Yeah.
These goals in this team. Let's stop conceding. Give yourself a chance.
Yeah. Let me give you an example. I had a new manager one time, and he first came in, and we knew what his style was. In the first game we played against a team that was out pressing and all that. And so the first game, not a lot of time to train. He put us in a back 3. We won the game. I think, okay. And then he had more time with us. So games 2, 3, 4, 20, we played a completely different style. But he came in week 1 and went, I don't like this opponent
Stop
here.
The rot. Yeah.
This doesn't feel good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go to a back 3. We never played a back 3 again.
Yeah,
it was only for that team.
Do what's required.
Do what's required.
Yeah, get the points. Eddie, hopefully we'll get that message in and hopefully spend some money in the January window to give Newcastle a chance. Let's move to the final game. Arsenal travelled up to Elm Road and Leeds. And I was interested in the Leeds reaction to getting beat 7. Obviously, some criticism of the team and Bielsa. And Elm Road, that was packed pre-Christmas. The fans are always, always support that team, always will be behind the manager. And I thought to myself, I felt this one was a test for Arsenal, a young Arsenal, going up against a team that's wounded, that's conceded 7, that Bielsa's, you know, took a little bit of criticism. I thought there'd be a reaction. And I know Leeds had a lot of players missing and had a bench of an average age of under 19 and a 15-year-old because Archie Gray was on the bench. So I take all that into account, but I thought this is a game where Leeds could really tough it out and possibly nick it, if not get a draw. Mm-hmm. They started the first 15 minutes. The place was jumping. The tackles were going in. And then their intensity dropped. They conceded a goal. And I'm afraid Arsenal ran all over them.
Arsenal are starting to look, and maybe it's Aubameyang, maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know. But Aubameyang has come out of the team. Mm. Martinelli is starting to shine.
Yeah.
He's 6 goal involvements in his last 6 games, scores the brace at Elland Road. He just looks like he's enjoying it. You know, starting to repay that faith that Mikel Arteta has put in him.
Yeah.
Now, Smith Rowe started on the bench the last 2 games, comes on and scores. Saka is, and for me, I love Saka.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, where was the kid from last year, the kid from the summer? He's starting to get that about him, where he's starting to wriggle inside, be ball dominant, starting to make things happen. And he got the goal off of a wicked deflection.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of the ball. And I just start to look at this team and think, there's something there now. Solid goalkeeper. Solid back four, you know, between Partey and Xhaka, some real grit and fight in the midfield. Now, it's a really well-balanced team. And what I like about it is Mikel Arteta came under criticism from everyone.
Yeah.
We're going to go with the youth. That's going to take some growing pains.
Yeah,
and for one, don't think managers are given a lot of time in the Premier League. So he was wanting to do something, but wanted to be given time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm actually quite happy for him now that we're starting to see the fruits of that labor. And probably earlier than I actually anticipated seeing it.
Well, my takeaway from the game was Arsenal growing up.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great piece when I was watching the tactical camera, and Stuart Dallas went down for Leeds and had treatment for about 3 or 4 minutes. I think he had a knock on his head, and fortunately it was okay. But during that 3 or 4 minutes, a couple of players went over to Arteta to discuss something. I saw the two centre-backs having a discussion, pointing and getting each other. I saw Odegaard and Saka talking about, and there was almost like a game management, a focus, a kind of seriousness about Arsenal. They were 1-0 up at the time, but it was almost like everybody was getting everybody on the toes to make sure they were at the game. They went on and got the second goal in that half, and then pretty much dominated the game from there. And I just thought to me, that's different from what I've seen from Arsenal. There's something that smells and feels like people are starting to get it. Now, whether it's as simple as Aubameyang not being part of it, and maybe there's some negative energy, maybe there's other people not trying, I don't know. Maybe we'll hear some more about what's going on there in time. But obviously, he was put to the side playing with the kids. I've got an interesting one for you, because Rebecca asked us, and I think it was both a question that we thought, wow. She said, you know, if Aubameyang's not there, who should be the next captain? And it was like a really good question. We took time to answer. I sort of went Gabriel, because I think as a centre-back, I like his position. I like that he might be able to dominate and become a bit more vocal. It might help his game. I think you went Smith Rowe, particularly.
Yeah.
You like him as a player who's come through the academy in that.
Well, I do. I think when, you know, Ramsdale is one for me that I feel has the ability to be captain. He's come in and he's been absolutely fantastic. He took that number one shirt.
Yeah.
But I think it's too soon for him.
Yeah.
He's only just got there.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it's not often that a goalkeeper
is. Can it be a burden for some players? Just on that, he's playing so well. Could some people see it as a burden? It's a bit too much, and then all of a sudden not be concentrating on his job because he's
thinking. I think it can be. That being said, Ramsdale, I don't think anything's going
to
bother him. He's got a ton of confidence.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Smith Rowe, and again, he's been in and out. He's been man-managed quite a bit, a bit like Pep, and it's no surprise that, you know, Arteta has gotten his coaching base under Pep Guardiola. But I think with Smith Rowe, just getting in the England team, I think he'll be there to stay for a long time.
Yeah.
He's a kid but he's amongst other kids.
Yeah.
And I think that would be an example of giving someone the captaincy and saying, we want you to be at this football club the next 10 years.
Yeah.
Continue to lead. Because I tell you what, if that Arsenal shirt means anything to anybody, it means the world to Smith Rowe. And I just think that he wears it with pride. You know, he's one of their best players.
Yeah.
He started the last 2 games on the bench.
Yeah.
It's easy for a young kid to sulk. Not him.
Comes off and scores.
Dominates the game, scores goals, celebrates like he just won the World Cup. Like, it means something to him.
Yeah.
So I think that could, in the future, maybe a
good point as well. And I think, added to that, it's a great representation for the academy.
Sure.
That you can come in our academy, and guess what? At a younger age, you can captain our team.
Sure.
You can be that guy. Let me just throw one at you that I was thinking last night about, and I'm wondering if this generation, I was slightly before your time, you've came, and then the current group. Is the captain such a big thing anymore? When I was playing, it was usually a centre-back or centre-midfield player. I had it in my years at Wimbledon. And it was almost felt like a big responsibility. You had to take care of the dressing room, work between the manager. Are we now in a space time where I think it's a bit more collective? I don't think it's about one person. Mm-hmm. I think it's like those group of young players, mm-hmm. those new players have come in Arsenal. It's almost like we'll all be captains. Yeah. We don't need one guy. It's not the John Terrys, the Tony Adams, the Vincent Companies, that guy who embodies everything. I just wonder if the modern game is a little bit different, that it's not as reliant on that one person in the dressing room. It's more about the group of players who have been brought up better than certainly I was, have been schooled through better academies, have got great football education. I don't know if the game's changing a little bit, and we put too much store on the captain and one guy and the leader.
Well, I don't think we do. I'm a traditionalist, but it's also how I think that how the game should always be played. You don't speak back to the captain. You don't leave the dressing room before the captain. You don't take the pitch before the captain. You know, when I was at Manchester United, you didn't speak back to Roy Keane. Mm. You waited for Roy Keane to leave the dressing room before you followed him out.
Yeah.
You never crossed the white line before Roy Keane did. Mm. And so
would Roy Keane work in that? He's a great example. Yeah. He's powerful, determined, aggressive when he needed to be. Great captain, selfless to the team. Yeah. But would he work in that Arsenal dressing room?
Not currently, no. No, because things change, things evolve. Yeah. Teams want to take pictures after the game with their tops off and all that stuff. And so, again, with a team like that, that's what we have to talk about how they're forming the club. They're forming the club with this youth movement, the young gunners, and that's great.
Yeah.
And so you probably need to have a captain that reflects that. Mm. Maybe they lead by example as opposed to, the blood and thunder type stuff. Yeah. So it's an interesting take. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. New managers, different ways in dressing room. Just before we close up, let's have a word on Leeds. Mm. 11 goals conceded in 2 games. A little bit of first time, really, since I can remember Bielsa getting a little bit of criticism. People saying, is he ready to assist him too much? Is he got to tweak things? We know there's a lot of injuries and these 5 or 6 players who go straight into the first team and make them better. But isn't that almost a reason to want to have to tweak things anyway?
Correct.
That you're putting in younger players, you're putting in less experienced players, and they're struggling to deal with the demands of how they are.
Yeah, and by the way, Leeds are where they are on the table, not because they've had to play young, inexperienced players the last 2 games.
Yeah.
And so the Premier League as a whole has worked out this system. Last year, you looked at the results, Leeds comes in, and players are thinking, why is this centre-back following me up the midfield? It short-circuited a lot of teams tactically. Yeah. With a year on, experience and tape and all the things, managers are starting to work this out. This is an easy system to play against because there's so many gaps. My worry is, and I said this to Rebecca when she asked the question, with Bielsa, I think pride goes before the fall. 7 got scored against them by Man City, 4 versus Arsenal. Yeah. They'll go to Liverpool, and nothing will change, by the way. They won't change systems because they're going to Anfield. No. They're going to open up. I'm telling you, I promise you, I will come back on the podcast and hold my hand up if Liverpool don't score at least 4 goals. I think they'll just wipe the floor with them.
Well, my point is, he's revered as one of the greatest coaches, the Peps, and people, Pochettino's talk about the learning from him. So why would a great coach, a great football mind, a guy who's thinking, not be able to say, okay, centre-backs, we're not going to go chasing, we'll pass on.
Sure.
Pass him into midfield, and I'll be stay here and pick. Why would that be a problem to a coach who's as good as this guy is? It just seems strange to me. I can't quite get my head around
it. Can't work it out. It seems strange. There's a stubbornness about him. We've seen it. He won't change. And, okay, he's had some success with that. But with Leeds, I always use the example. In the Premier League, you have to be resilient defensively. That can look a bunch of different ways. You've heard me say this.
Yeah.
You can be Chelsea.
Yeah.
Really super organized, tactically astute. You can be Liverpool. We're just going to press you from all the front 6 areas. We're going to leave the back 4 intact, and you'll probably turn the ball over. Mm. Or you could be Burnley, which isn't a great example right now.
You could be Man City, keep the ball so you don't have to defend because you keep it so
correct.
Well.
Man City or Burnley, they block everything online.
Yeah.
But however you do it, you have to find a way as a group to be resilient defensively. Yeah. Not only are they not resilient, they're the exact opposite. Mm. You talked about it today in one of the highlights. It's like you could drive a truck through the two center backs. Yeah. There's so much space and gaps in vulnerable areas. I don't see this changing anytime for Leeds. Mm.
Well, he's had great success, and he's brought them up, and there's no doubt he's been brilliant for the football club.
Absolutely.
I just hope that he isn't that stubborn. I hope that he can tweak and not change the system, because the football has been brilliant, and they've been a breath of fresh air. But I'd hate to see them go down, having worked so hard and the way they're conceding. And as you say, you're going to Liverpool, who scored, what was it, 50 goals now in the Premier League. If there's one team you want to defend against properly, it's Liverpool. Listen, mate, it's been great to catch up. It's time to wrap up on match week 18. And we only got four games played, six of them called off through COVID. But the big three teams all played, but only Manchester City got all 3 points, while Arsenal and Arteta showed his life after Aubameyang, with the Young Gunners in great form. Look out for a special podcast. That's next Tuesday, December the 27th. There's a great one-on-one interview with Manchester United legend and former Middlesbrough manager. So his manager, Brian Robson, the legend Brian Robson, gives us a great podcast. That, honestly, you want to listen to that one. And then we'll be back on Monday, December the 27th, when hopefully, fingers crossed, the Boxing Day games are played and we can review those. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Tim Howard. Well, he's almost an honorary Robbie. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe and stay healthy. Have a happy holidays to everybody. It's a good night from me. It's a good night from him. Good night.